Well, welcome back to our training podcast for lead pastors. Today we're talking about Sunday services. I know I've heard multiple guys on our staff say, you know, Sundays keep coming. You know, it seems like you just get out of one Sunday and you're already thinking about the next one. They're obviously a very important part of the responsibilities of a lead pastor in our structure here at Alpine. And I'm excited we have Pastor Jared with us today. I can't wait to hear his insights because I believe he's overseen more Sunday services than anyone on our staff at Alpine. So I really believe this will be a blessing and very useful for you guys as we get to hear Jared. I want to lead this off with a verse. 1 Corinthians 14:33 tells us that God is not a God of disorder, but of peace, as in all the meetings of God's holy people. I want to give a little context for that verse. You know, Paul is talking about how many people should speak, when they should speak, who should prophesy, if someone's going to speak in tongues, there needs to be someone there who can interpret it. There's a lot going on. But I think this idea of God being a God of order and a God of peace is important when we think about our Sunday services. And one of the things I've noticed about Pastor Jared is when he's there, there's just a sense of peace. There's a sense that things are going to be okay. God obviously gets the glory for that. You know, he's doing the heavy lifting, but as pastors, we have a responsibility to try and help create an environment of order and peace. So, gee, I feel like you do that as well as any guy we have on our staff. I'm excited to have you contribute to this today and give these guys some of the insights that you've learned over, you know, your years of doing ministry here for Alpine. And I can imagine that a guy who's listened to this, as we get into all the different roles on a Sunday, might be overwhelmed. He might start to think, well, man, there's just so many different things that have to happen on a Sunday. What would you communicate to that guy, G, as we kind of lead into this about that feeling of being overwhelmed?
Well, yeah, thanks, John. Well, first, I've been there, so I can relate. And what I do want to make sure that we communicate is we're not saying that the lead pastor is responsible to execute everything that we're going to be looking at today. He's not. But what we are asking lead pastors to be, that we are leaders of leaders. And it does mean, however, that we take extreme ownership and that you know that things are going to be fulfilled, that things are going to, you know, get done, even if you're not the one doing them.
Well, gee, we know that Sunday services certainly aren't the only responsibility of LPs on staff, but they're an important part. You know, and it's an important part of our philosophy of ministry, the Alpine Way. We want to be culturally sensitive to where God has placed us. I think of Hebrews 10:25, where we're told not to neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. So we are called to meet together on a regular basis. It's part of God's plan for his church. And historically, and in our cultural context, that regular meeting takes place on Sundays. And I think it's helpful for someone who's stepping into this role to be aware of and think about our philosophy of how we do Sunday mornings. And part of that is we view our Sunday worship services as a gateway experience. So, gee, maybe you can just kind of bring some clarity to what we mean by that, and what does that practically mean for the lead pastor as he's thinking about a Sunday?
Yeah, so this is what that means. It's we always seek to make our services a place where unchurched people can take their first steps toward trusting Jesus, and our services also serve as a gateway into actual measurable discipleship relationships. In other words, we desire them to be catalytic. You know, are there these elements of the service that need to be explained to someone who didn't grow up in the church, such as communion, baptism, commissioning elements, baby dedications, etc.? Is there some way that times we need to be able to communicate that we're talking to the whole audience, not just the churched people? And then thinking through just simple details as adequate signage and directions for people who are new. You know, it can be intimidating walking into an environment, a building for the very first time and not knowing where to go. And we don't really want anyone to be in that position. Now, again, if you're new, there's going to be this newness. You're going to have this opportunity to discover a little bit about where the restrooms are, where to drop off kids for kids church, where the worship auditorium, you know, where am I going to go sit and listen to the service and be a part of the service. And even out to the parking lot, when people pull into the parking lot for the very first time, is it packed? Is it hard? You know, are the front doors clearly marked? Is there adequate signage for visitor parking? You know, we just want to take down any and all barriers that we possibly can before somebody new walks into the building for the service for the very first time.
And when you talk about explaining elements, Jared, for someone who maybe didn't grow up in the church, you know, like communion or baptism, things like that, we're not saying that we have to do, you know, a 15-minute deep dive into the Bible about the significance of those events, but we don't want people to feel left out, right? Just a brief definition. And I even think of some of the terms we use at Alpine that if somebody was coming in for the first time, if we don't take just a quick second and define it, they don't know what we're talking about. So, for example, anytime I do an announcement for Fusion, I just quickly say, if you're new here, Fusion is our youth group for junior high and senior high students, right? It takes, 3 seconds to do that. But somebody coming in who's never been to Alpine before, if you stand up there and say, hey, don't forget about Fusion on Wednesday or Thursday, they don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a good point, John. There's extra opportunities for us to be able to communicate a little bit more, even though we know it. We know that Alpiners know the language. But I'll tell you what, something that put me at peace years ago that I'll never forget, that I was sitting in a service, even for communion. So communion's one of those opportunities that if we just think that everyone's a believer in the audience, but communion is for the believers, but what about the ones that are not, who have not yet, you know, put their faith and trust in Jesus for communion, and we just ask them to not be a part of these elements? Well, I can remember sitting in a church service and the pastor would say, hey, if you're seeking Jesus, we're so glad you're with us this morning. We're so glad you're here. And he just really made me feel welcomed in that moment. And also that even though I'm not going to be a part of taking these elements, that he was glad I was there. And so that's just a small little something to not forget about when we take communion, to think that everyone's a believer in the audience. We have a lot of, you know, people seeking God here at Alpine. And to maybe just thank them for coming before you really get into the communion elements, and then explain, but this is for believers, and just to help them not feel like outsiders, but they truly feel welcomed in our service.
That's great stuff. And we've already talked about things like the parking lot, about signage, about definitions and explaining things, trying to avoid inside lingo. So again, I can imagine that the LP is already thinking, wow, there's just a lot here, a lot to do. But we want to remind these guys, we're not talking about you doing all this. We're not saying that you as the lead pastor is personally going to execute or fulfill these. It takes a team approach. And Jared, I know you're passionate about one of our core values. You use it a lot at our meetings. You run a lot of your decisions through this grid of we win as a team, not as individuals. So fill us in a little bit on what that team approach looks like for you on Sunday mornings, and how many people are we actually talking about to pull this off?
Yeah, it takes about 40 people per service, John, to be able to fulfill what we want to fulfill in one service on a Sunday morning. So what that means, many campuses have 2. I know Logan has 3. And if we continue to grow, it's very easy for many of our campuses to get back to 3 services. So you see this team approach. If it takes 40 people per service, and now not all volunteers, you know, come in and out. That doesn't mean if you do 3 services, then you're up to 120 people. Like the teacher usually remains the same, the worship team remains the same. But for instance, kids church, usually in most cases, it's a whole new team that comes in. So it really is a team approach. There's 16 teams represented on a Sunday morning to allow what we are going to accomplish. And it takes 40 people per service to be able to do that. Now, I love that. I love the fact that, you know, at each location, we have usually one full-time pastor as the lead pastor, depending on who's teaching, could be a full-time pastor. But our worship director, our kids' church directors, they're part-time. And then everyone else is a volunteer. And I just love, it's a beautiful picture of really the church, the people coming together, serving to help people pursue God on a Sunday morning. And it really reminds me of the org chart, how important the org chart is. So a lead pastor will feel overwhelmed if there's ministry leaders missing on the org chart, or there's team leaders missing on the org chart, or if there's just a team that just doesn't have enough team members to accomplish what we need to. It's very important to really look at that org chart and to try to fulfill it the best you possibly can. I know it's a big organizational chart of a lot of volunteers, but when you have people in the right place and you have ministry leaders leading those ministries and you have team leaders leading those team members, man, it is really an amazing thing to watch at work. The church, the body of Christ, really fulfilling, helping people pursue God on Sunday mornings.
And that's why we started last week with the Leader of Leaders training. Because if you don't get that part of it right, Sundays do become overwhelming real fast, right? But if, as you said, Jared, if the org chart is full, or at least mostly full, I mean, look, it's the real world. We all have seasons where we have a few holes in the org chart. Somebody moves, somebody steps away. But generally, if you can keep that org chart filled, if you can have people in those key roles, it really does make things run a lot smoother on Sundays. It keeps you from feeling overwhelmed as a lead pastor. And the reality is, you're going to have people on your team who have strengths that you don't have. You know, I think of you, Jared, just your ability with facilities things and how you have this great attention to detail on how the campus looks, that quite frankly, I don't have. Now, I can get better at it, and that's something I'm working to get better at, but you just have, you know, you have an ability to walk in and see, like, wait a minute, that doesn't look right, or this would be more welcoming if we move the welcome desk over here, or this traffic flow pattern makes more sense. And there are probably some guys listening to this training that don't have that. Like, I don't have that. It just doesn't come naturally. So when you are being a leader of leaders, be careful not to fill your team and fill your org chart with people who are just like you. Look for people who have some different strengths that can complement your strengths. Well, there's a service order that we do every week, right, Jared, to kind of help people get ready for the service, to know ahead of time what things are going to look like, who's going to be doing announcements, who's going to be teaching, that week, who's on worship. So help a guy just think through that service order, creating the service order. What are some of the things that they need to be aware of? What are some things they need to think through as they're preparing that and getting ready to send it out to their teams?
Yeah, and I like to view it like this, is from the time the countdown stops and the service starts, you know, what are all the elements? What are all the opportunities for other leaders that are going to be a part of this service? I mean, there's a lot to think through. So we go through and we think through, you know, what songs, who's going to be doing the welcome. So a lot of lead pastors have a lot of responsibilities, and some might teach at other locations, or you're going to be on vacation. But thinking through who's going to get up and do the welcome, who's going to also do the announcements, plus all the announcements that we're going to be, you know, looking at on that Sunday, you know, from video elements, are there any prayer elements that we're going to add? And then the teaching pastor for that day that's going to give the message, is it the first Sunday of the month, which means we're going to take communion together? Are there any baptisms on that day, baby dedications, or any other service elements that we need to be thinking through? So really just thinking through from the time it starts to the time it finishes the service, what are all the details that are going to be in that service order? And now, I do want to say this, trying to limit, you know, things that are going to add time to a service is valuable at times. So we shoot for 55 minutes to an hour. That's kind of our time stamp that we're shooting for. And I do want to say this, and We view this through the kids' church lens. So all the volunteers that we have in kids' church, when we start going to an hour and 5 minutes, an hour and 10 minutes possibly, and I think we're all guilty of it, guys. We're all guilty of it at times. But that puts an extra layer of responsibility in the kids' church. Kids' church curriculum in the classroom is built for about 55 minutes, not to exceed an hour. And then once we hit that 1 hour mark, now those kids' church teachers are kind of looking for the end of the service to happen. So I think that's just kind of important to know. Now, there's some things that we are in control of. As lead pastors, you're going to be looking at, you know, announcements. Are there announcements that we've already announced that maybe we don't have to have on that day? If, you know, if we're going to have extra elements that are going to add time. So like baptisms on different Sundays than communion, that's a good rule. It's not a hard rule, but it's something to consider. But just also another opportunity, as we are possibly teaching in other locations or on vacation, when we have baptisms, like careful consideration to allowing others to speak from the stage during a Sunday service. So if this person's been really instrumental in helping them come to faith, but possibly there's some just differences of theology, just kind of protecting the stage of what's being communicated. We want it to be very much biblical, and we want it to be very much Christ-centered. But really just thinking through all the different elements of the service order, who are the people that are going to be delivering those elements? I mean, that's a big part before Sunday that a lead pastor during the week has to think through and fulfill, and then really building out the service.
And there are going to be some of you guys that want to be more involved in parts of this than others. So, for example, I know one of our lead pastors kind of likes to have a say in the songs that are picked each Sunday. Whereas for me, and I'm not saying he doesn't trust his worship director, but I've got enough confidence in my worship director. I know he gets it. I know that he's going to try and make sure the songs tie in well with the message for that day. So I don't play an active role in picking the songs on a Sunday. So again, back to this leader of leaders things, if you can put people around you that you can have them take some of that away from you, some of that off your plate, it's a big blessing to you. The other thing I would just encourage the guys to do is limit the number of videos that we have in a service. Now, we try to have those conversations already centrally as a staff. You know, in our LP meetings, we try to be aware of, are we going to have multiple video elements? You know, we're usually shooting for one, right, G? Maybe two, but I can't think of a service where we've had more than two video elements in a service.
Yeah, that's a good point, John. I agree. That's just going to add extra layers of timestamps to the service. And if you can communicate something in 15 to 20 seconds that a video is communicating possibly in a minute or minute plus, I think that's a good point to remind. And then again, just having these video elements at the beginning, in the middle, and possibly at the end, I think that's just too many. I think it just kind of flows better with how you just communicated that, at times needing to limit that.
G, you brought up the point of just be aware and be careful of who you allow to speak from the stage. I think most LPs have almost this embedded desire to kind of protect the pulpit a little bit, which I think is a good thing. But yeah, I know we've had a situation where someone offered up a prayer at a baptism from the stage. They were of a different faith background. They said some things that were not biblical. It's important that we just think through who we're allowing to speak from the stage. I know that I recently had an opportunity where I allowed a parachurch organization some time from the stage to talk about an event, and they ended up having a big financial ask on the same Sunday that we already had a financial ask. It was just not good. That was on me. Like, that was my fault for not having extreme clarity on what they wanted to communicate, what they were going to say from the stage. So again, guys, as you're looking at, you know, having service hosts or having, you know, anyone else speak from the stage besides yourself or besides your worship director, you know, just be aware, maybe even have them script out for you what they plan to say so that you know what's going to be coming and you're not caught off guard. So we've talked about developing the service order. We've talked about thinking through it from the beginning to the end and how that's important. Once we've done that, G, who do we need to communicate that to? I know each LP does a little bit differently, but I typically try to have my service order all filled out and ready to go Wednesday or Thursday for that following Sunday. And then I need to make sure it's communicated. So who all needs to know what the service order is going to look like?
That's a good point, John. And I would say, yeah, always think through this, that more people involved with what's going on is always better. So here's kind of a list of in, you know, details and teams that these would be teams who would want to know what's going on before Sunday actually starts. And so that would be the worship team, you know, the sound and media person. They kind of need to know. They need to know when videos are coming up, or there's nothing more that catches a sound guy off guard, that you hit the video and it's playing, but there's no sound. Details like that. I think the teaching pastor, just to be aware of all the details of what's happening on that service order, it's very important. Obviously, the lead pastor. Weekend service leaders, again, if there are going to be if there's a time where you're going to be away from the campus, you're not going to be able to be there, it is important that there is a weekend service leader that really fulfills your role of knowing all the details. The welcome desk, again, if we're making announcements from the stage and people have questions about that, most likely if they come up and talk to you at the end of the service, that's great. But as they leave and they have questions about that, they might stop by the welcome desk. So the welcome desk needs to know details of what's happening, what we're promoting, and where to point people and how to sign up for these things and all the details about it. And just then, service hosts as well. Again, there's people that will be up there at the end that will be there for prayer, connection, all kinds of things. But again, if they kind of know the details of what's happening, more information that they know, the better they'll be equipped to answer any and all questions after the service.
Yeah, one of those that jumps out at me is the welcome desk. As you mentioned, I learned the hard way what happens when you don't inform the welcome desk. And you know, they were gracious about it, but my welcome desk team leader a couple of years ago said, hey, it would really be helpful, John, if we knew going into Sunday what the announcements were going to be, because that's going to trigger questions to the welcome desk. It's going to trigger signups often. So people are going to be coming to us to sign up for a small group launch maybe, or to sign up for harvest party volunteers, or to sign up, you know, whatever it might be, right? We're always announcing things. And so to give that welcome desk a heads up that, hey, here's what people are likely going to be coming up and asking you about this week, was a big win for our campus and something I should have thought about ahead of time. And then your service host. So keep in mind, our service hosts typically aren't up on the stage as much as we are. And even if they're good at it, if you're just springing stuff on them the morning of, my experience is they're not very good at handling that. That most of our service hosts, if you can get the announcement scheduled to them earlier in the week, or they have a time to look through it, even talk through it, kind of practice it at home, it'll make a big difference into how it comes across on a Sunday morning. It is obvious to me, and I'm sure it is to you, Jared, when I'm teaching, I try not to also host the service. I try to have someone else who's doing all the announcements, etc. And I can tell in the first 5 seconds of that announcement time if they looked at the announcements or not, or if they just showed up on Sunday and kind of winged it. And it's not a good thing typically when they wing it. So if you can get that service order out to your service host earlier in the week so they have an opportunity to prep, it makes a big difference. Well, another role that some of the LPs have, Jared, it'd be interesting to hear your take on this, is building out the service in Proclaim. So Proclaim is the software that we use to actually run our services on Sunday. It's what the media desk is using to get the slides on the screen, to get the videos on the screens, etc. So some of our LPs build out the service in Proclaim. Some of our campuses, it's the guy who's on media for that week who actually built it out. I think in even some of our campuses, it's the worship director. So again, guys, we're not saying that this responsibility falls on you necessarily, But we are saying you need to take extreme ownership and make sure it's being done and being done well. So, gee, I just out of curiosity, do you build out your service in Proclaim, or do you have someone else from your campus do it?
Well, currently right now I do it, but I've also had somebody else do it. You know, 15 years on staff, I've kind of had seasons of both. I think it's good that the campus should have at least 2 to 3 people that knows how to build out the service in Proclaim. So I've actually trained my worship director currently at West Haven. She would be able to, so if something were to happen to me, or say I was out of town and for whatever reason I cannot get online, or for whatever reason I wouldn't be able to build it out, I do have somebody else that can. But I do want to add one more person from the media team that has the ability and the knowledge of being able to build out the service as well. Again, I think more is better than less. And if you're the only one, that burden week after week after week after week, I just think it's good that you would really be intentional about training somebody else up also that knows how to do it. Not that you can't do it, but just knowing that there's somebody at the campus that also can fulfill being able to do this opportunity and responsibility.
Well, gee, this isn't meant to be a full-blown Proclaim tutorial. That's something that we'll be doing in another video where you'll actually be able to watch some of these steps. But can you just give us a general overview of what are the elements that you're paying attention to when you're building out that service in Proclaim? What are just some kind of key ideas that guys need to be thinking about if they're the ones who are going to build it, or if they're having somebody else build it at the campus?
Yeah, so let's talk with the visual part of details. Are there any slides that need to be created? So if we have details on the slide, it just makes, I think, the announcement a little bit easier to give. So think through announcement slides. Are there any baptisms on this Sunday that, you know, a baptism slide might need to be created? Baby dedication. You know, it's great to have a visual of the baby on screen, the baby we're dedicating. If it's a holiday, you know, 4th of July, Memorial Day, those kind of details, it's just important to understand also what videos. So if there's going to be a video element that's connected to this service order, just thinking through. Now, a lot of times in our lead pastor, which John, you lead great, we will talk about, you know, the video elements, and sometimes we'll choose one together, but it's not mandatory that you'd have to use that video. But just thinking through all the video elements and then going to the AC Media folder to grab those and to be able to make sure you get all those uploaded. If you created slides, obviously you would download those and get those imported in the service. And then the teacher, knowing the teacher that's teaching on that Sunday, what teaching slides to go and grab from Canva or the AC Media folder. I like the fact that we have a couple different opportunities to grab slides and details. We have the AC Media folder, but then we also all have access that we can just go grab them from Canva. And then there's an important detail to duplicate previous services so you're not adding in all these slides each and every week. So when you duplicate a service, now you just go in and have to edit a few slides, which really makes it simple week to week. But that's important to duplicate the service for the next Sunday. What's nice about Proclaim is it stores every service we ever do. So if you knew the date, you'd be able to type it in and you would be able to go grab something from that date if you were looking to do so. For like Easter and Christmas, that's very valuable that we don't have to build out a Christmas service or an Easter service every year. We can go duplicate last year's and then just edit it. But week to week, know that you need to duplicate the service so it's ready now to make edits midweek as you start preparing for the next Sunday.
And again, guys, we will have another video here in the library with a more in-depth tutorial on how to do that. You know, we'll do a screen share video where you can actually see how to duplicate a service, how to bring in outside media, you know, how to upload slides, etc. So there'll be certainly more training on that. And as G said, you're not on an island trying to remember all the holidays, for example, or trying to remember, you know, we in our weekly LP meetings, and that's the beauty of doing this as a team. Even if I might forget about an upcoming holiday, which I've done, or even if G might forget about an upcoming holiday, Oh, Jew's pretty good. He rarely forgets. There's someone in that room that's going to say, "Hey, wait a minute, guys, it's Veterans Day. Wait a minute, guys, it's Memorial Day. You know, what video element are we going to use? How are we going to incorporate that into a pastoral element where we're praying?" So that's really helpful. All right, we've got just really one more kind of key category we're going to talk about before we wrap up, and that is the facilities. You know, I remember, G, you've made the comment on more than one occasion that as the lead pastor at Layton for all those years, kind of your side title was you were the head custodian. You were always aware of and paying attention to the facilities. So help a lead pastor understand what that looks like Sunday morning, but also what that looks like leading up to Sunday. Because the reality is, if our campus is a complete disaster, you know, Monday through Saturday, for us to think we're going to come in on Sunday morning and get everything corrected, it's probably not very realistic. And again, guys, as G goes through this, just want to remind you, we're not saying you're cleaning. You know, you should have a clean team. You should have someone who's taking ownership of this. But we are saying at the end of the day, if it's not done, like you're not above cleaning a toilet. Right, Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. As lead pastors, we need to model that servant leadership. That if we show up on a Sunday morning and for whatever reason something's happened, the clean team didn't get it done, you know, we can't be above taking out the trash. We can't be above restocking the paper towels in the restrooms. We need to know how to do these things. Although I would say most weeks you're not the one doing it. So, G, help us to think through this kind of in an orderly way, maybe bring some comfort to these guys that are feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah, good point, John. I love how you just shared that. Yeah, and a lot of this is going to happen before Sunday morning. But like John, you mentioned, if there's something that needs to happen on Sunday morning, we need to get it done. But I like to think of it like this. We are inviting hundreds of people to the location. And if you were inviting hundreds of people to your home, how much work would you put in to make sure that it's clean and ready for your guests? And I just kind of like that visual of how many people are going to be walking through the doors. And so be thinking through from the property, the parking lot. You know, if you drive in and you start noticing weeds or, you know, details about the facility, they will also think those same thoughts. So there's a lot that happens here. But then I want to say this, I am grateful for every clean team member we have at each location. It is one of the most important teams we have. And I love how you brought in Jesus's washing the feet of the disciples. It is just a great memory and reminder of how important that having everything clean and ready for the guests to come is. So thinking through every part of the building. After they parked and they come into the building, that the lobby, that the auditorium, and possibly the most important room to make sure that is clean is the restrooms. I know that there's a lot of statistics out there that if somebody walks into a filthy restroom, the likeliness of them coming back, whether it's someplace where they're eating or just visiting, they will not want to come back because of that. So just thinking through those details, it's very important. And so also remembering kids' church and the kids' church classrooms as well. A lot of times people won't walk through there, but even though kids' parents are looking at the drop-off, when they drop their kids off, they're looking in the room, they're looking at the teachers, they're looking at how clean the facility is. It's important. It really is. And many people have no problem signing up for the clean team. But it is an important clean, it's an important ministry, it's an important team to have ready for what we want to accomplish on a Sunday morning.
I would just encourage the lead pastors too, when you have that clean team built, man, show them appreciation on a regular basis. It's kind of one of those behind the scenes teams where nobody really notices unless they don't get it done. You know, if you walk into that restroom, it's filthy. That's often the first time anyone pays any attention to the clean team. And so really be loving on them, really be encouraging them, really be thanking them, because it is one of those behind the scenes ministries. Another thing, Jared, that I know I've heard you talk about in our lead pastor meetings, and in fact, it's been really helpful for me, and I feel like I've grown in this area, is just even being strategic as to our chairs in the auditorium and the chapel. So, you know, guys, you're going to want to think through if it's a real heavy Sunday like Easter Sunday or Christmas Eve, do I need to bring in more chairs? If it's maybe a holiday weekend in the summer, like 4th of July weekend or Memorial Day weekend, where, you know, traditionally we're pretty light, should you take some chairs out? You know, we're trying to find this balance. I know the studies have shown that when you're 2/3 full, you're full. And what I mean by that is people tend to stop being invitational if the service they're attending, more than 2/3 of the seats are full, because they just feel like there's not a place for their friends to come in and have a seat next to them. So keep that in mind. The Logan campus has a balcony, and we don't do it often, but every now and then, if I just know we're going to be light, I'll close off the balcony. It's super easy to open it back up if I need to. I know Pastor Brian has roped off some sections on some of their lighter Sundays just to get people not so spread out and to make the room seem a little more full. So just be thinking about that, guys. I would say most of the time you're not changing your seating structure on a regular basis, but every now and then you might. Gee, I would imagine you're one of the first guys in the door on Sunday morning. So what does Sunday morning look like for you as far as opening up the facility, maybe kind of those last minute checks that you're doing to make sure everything's ready as people start to show up?
Yeah, well, I pull into the parking lot and I have the lens of a first-time guest as I'm driving in. Is there anything that I have to go do before I even enter into the building? So once I park farthest in the back. So I walk up. So again, I'm just looking, is there anything out of place? Is there anything that needs to be tidied up outside before I even get into the building? Now I get there pretty early. I'm old. I can't sleep well. So it's okay. I can get there sometime. On most days, I'm the first one there. Not that the lead pastor has to be that, but you will get old like me someday and you probably won't be able to sleep. Once I walk in, I have that same lens. I'm just looking for anything out of place. I'm looking for anything that needs to be done. I do a walkthrough. I'll usually walk to my left at the West Haven campus first and go through the kids' church wing downstairs, which is the infants' room and toddler room. And then I'll walk again through the lobby, looking at every part of it, go through the auditorium. Are the chairs straightened? I have a chair set up where it's really easy now because of the tiles of the carpet, where I can straighten chairs without anything but the carpet. And I kind of straighten everything up, look for trash. I go through the restrooms to make sure they were clean. And then now, especially now in summer, I'm going and checking the thermostats. I'm making sure that the building is ready to go. I'm making sure that the lights are all on as soon as I get there as well. I'm turning on TVs, turning on the lights. Now, again, I get there early. I have three other people that I can lean on when I'm not going to be there that will turn on the lights, make sure the thermostats are ready to go, and turn on the TVs. But since I'm there early anyway, and I know the guys also have other responsibilities that know how to do all that, I don't mind doing that, but I don't need to be the one doing that. And so it's just, again, kind of walking through the facility, making sure everything is in place and ready to go for the day.
One of the things that I think of, G, is those events that don't happen every week. And so sometimes they might sneak up on us like communion. So if I know we're doing communion that Sunday, I want to make sure that that's ready. I have checklists. I'm a checklist guy. Most of our teams have checklists. I know a lot of your teams use checklists, G. I think they're valuable. So one of the things that I had added to my checklist in Logan is the clicker that the teaching pastor is going to use. Is it ready to go? Has it been charged? Does it have good batteries in it? You know, the handheld microphone that the service host is going to use, are the batteries fresh in it? The handless microphone that the teaching pastor is going to use, is it ready to go? Have we done a sound check on it? So those different checklists that, again, guys, your teams can use, so that you as an LP are not doing all this, they're important, and they will save you some stress and save you some headache in the long run. So, G, we're kind of getting close to the end here. I want to ask you a couple questions. Is there anything else on the opening that maybe we've forgotten about or other checklists that are important to you? And then what's it like at the end of the day for you? So once the services are done, Is it just, reverse order of everything we did to open, or what's the close look like for you?
Yeah, to close up the facility, it's important to make sure it's locked, make sure everything's off. I'm probably the last one out 50% of the time. And so there's several people at the location at West Haven that know how to lock up and turn everything off. Again, with the thermostats of today, usually they're scheduled, so we're in our schedule season, but possibly, you bumped it up now, or you bumped it down in the summertime. Remember maybe to bump it up so it's not running, 70 or 71 all week. Just thinking through those details. But yeah, it's pretty much simple as far as, the clean team's going to come in and clean everything. So you're just basically turning everything off and locking everything up and, getting it ready for the midweek stuff that's going to be happening at the location.
And with the addition of safety teams at our campuses, I know for most of our campuses, that safety team's going to play a role in the close, right? They're going to be the ones to make sure everything's locked. They're going to be the ones to make sure things are turned off, that there's not any safety issues like, a coffee pot left on or plugged in or those types of things. So they can be a very valuable asset in your close and in your lockup, again, where it's not you doing everything. Jared, this conversation I feel is different in one sense than maybe if we'd had this conversation 5, 6, 7 years ago, because our lead pastors teach much more often than we used to. A lot of our lead pastors teach every other Sunday. So help a guy understand, if he's teaching that Sunday, all these things we've just talked about, are they still his primary role? Is he relying more on the team around him? What does it look like if an LP is teaching on a Sunday versus if an LP is not teaching on Sunday?
Yeah, that's a good point, John. Yeah, I'll say this. We have a lot more teaching responsibilities, and I know that before we really, as lead pastors, started to teach more, it was very freeing that you would come in and kind of approach every Sunday just as we communicated it. You're checking on this, you're checking on that. You have the ability to be relaxed in an opportunity to help out where needed. But I'll say this, yes, it changes. If you're the teaching pastor on that day as well as the lead pastor, the priority of teaching is important and making sure that you are ready to go. And I think different pastors will approach the day a little bit differently. I know that I try to find a quiet place in the building before I teach, and I spend much more time in prayer on that Sunday about the message. Just really focused on what that role is and what that role needs. And so I feel like I need to prepare myself differently. So I cannot be bogged down with all the other details. And that's why my overseers, they know my teaching schedule. They have extra responsibilities on that day to where they'll come in and take care of the responsibilities of seeing things and looking for things out of place alongside myself. But I really want to make sure that I'm ready to jump up on stage and preach God's word and be honoring to him and approach it in that spiritual manner that it needs to be approached. So it's much different, John, for me, whether I'm teaching or if I'm not.
I find the same thing for me. If I'm not teaching, I'll be in the chapel to make sure I'm ready for the announcement time, but I like to kind of then sneak out into the lobby and catch those latecomers. I like to be shaking hands for people that are maybe running behind. And I have a lot of neat interactions with people in the lobby after the service has actually started when I'm not teaching. But when I'm teaching, I'm just like you said, I'm usually going into our worship team room. I'm spending, another few minutes in prayer, just asking God to bring me clarity on what he wants me to communicate. So I do think our roles look a little different on a teaching Sunday than a Sunday when, we have a teaching pastor coming in, and we can be more of the cheerleader, more of the handshaker, and really kind of working the room, if you want to use that term. Well, lastly, Dee, just, even kind of philosophically, what does it look like for you before the service and after the service? How do you kind of see your roles or maybe some of your primary responsibilities as you're interacting with people in the building pre-service versus post-service?
Yeah, before the service, the first role I play is a cheerleader. And I like that visual because I'm really focused on the volunteers that are coming in. And they obviously get there far earlier than, you know, attenders or, you know, people who are going to be checking us out for the very first time. So I try to be intentional to those who are serving. I'm trying to cheerlead. I'm trying to connect with them. You know, I might ask them, hey, how was your week? I don't want to keep them from getting their tasks achieved, but I want them to know that I care about them and I'm trying to connect with them and, you know, keeping it light, but knowing that I care about them and I thank them for serving and, you know, just kind of rallying the troops and cheerleading, I think is a great focus that we need to have as lead pastors as we get there early in the morning. And then really just, you know, building on relationships and looking for opportunities. Does somebody need some extra care? Like when you're checking in with people, you know, not everyone will give you, hey, everything's great. But just be intentional about looking as you're checking in and cheerleading. Is the person right? Is there need to be any follow-up? Do they need extra encouragement outside of Sunday morning? I've experienced that, and it's good to have that thought process going in as you are checking in and being a cheerleader before the service.
And then how does that shift to after the service, G?
Yeah, so the message is done. You know, whether some campuses do a song. As soon as that service ends, now it's all about serving the needs of those who come forward or those who are going out to the lobby and also looking for connection who also have needs. So it's really about connections and next steps. I mean, we're about helping people pursue God. And how can we help? How can we help them take that next step? How can we help get resources in their hands? You know, in a prayer opportunity, many of us have opportunities to pray with people after the service. If somebody comes up and has a need through that prayer, that's a next action step that we might be able to help them with resources. For instance, we probably get as many prayers for marriage. Can you please pray for my marriage? Just about anything else we have. Well, they might not be asking for a marriage mentor, but that might be what they need. And so just be looking and thinking through that. I know I've pointed people to recovery because, you know, they've come up and asked for prayer about an addiction. And so just really be thinking about helping people pursue God. What is that prayer request? And is there an opportunity to point them to connection/resources that's going to help them with that prayer need that they just asked for?
Yeah, I think the after service is where we can really hone in on handoff opportunities for mentoring. It's where we can hone in on opportunities to connect someone to a small group. If they have a physical need, as you mentioned, it's a great way to get them connected to something that can help solve a physical need. It's tough to do that pre-service. It just is. You know, you're trying to get everything ready, make sure you're ready to go. But post-service is definitely a great time to be thinking about how do I help them take their next step, whatever that is, right? As we said at the very beginning, we want our Sunday services to be catalytic to real, measurable, intentional discipleship relationships. And so to have that mindset, guys, as you're wrapping up a service is important. One of the things that I've gotten better at, you know what it's like. Sometimes it just seems like on a Sunday, 40 things get thrown at you. You know, three different team leaders say, hey, I need to meet with you to talk about X. And four people have a prayer request and you realize that you need to order creamer and you just all these different things. And so what I've begun doing, if someone, you know, brings a prayer request to me or someone says, hey, I need this or I need to, I ask them now, I say, look, you can imagine Sundays are crazy and I don't want to drop the ball on this. Could you text that to me? Could you shoot me a quick email? Just this last Sunday, a woman whose brother's been battling cancer said, hey, we got updated test results and the cancer is at this specific point of his body. Can you be praying for healing? And I said, I would love to. I promise I will, but I'll forget. Like if you just walk away, I'm going to forget with everything going on Sunday. Would you shoot me a text and just remind me to be praying for him this week? And then that way I know I'll get it done. So if you're like me and it's hard to keep, you know, a lot of different things straight when it's all hitting you at one time, I don't think there's anything wrong with asking someone to shoot you a quick text or a quick email as a follow-up. Well, gee, as we wrap this up, I mean, we're pretty much landing the plane now, but it might be easy to think, oh, I locked the doors. We made it through another Sunday. We made it through. God was faithful. And now, you know, we got to get ready for the next one. But I think if that's our attitude, maybe we're missing an important piece of it. So how would you encourage these guys to kind of wrap up their Sunday as they're walking out and closing up the building?
Well, most likely before the service starts, I think there's an opportunity for the team to come, and there's this praying for the service, that we go to God and pray for the service. And I think we do that every week at almost every location that I've been a part of, and I think that's great. But I think, like John said, we'd be missing an opportunity to be praising God. So we looked at a lot of our responsibilities, and there's a lot of responsibilities not only we have, but a lot of people within the church body have. But let's not miss out on God's faithfulness when we do a service, how he's at work in the lives and the hearts of those who come. And so for me, now again, early on in ministry, I would miss this. I did exactly what you said, John. I would lock up and go, okay, it's great. Thank you, God, for a great day, and that was it. But to really be thanking God for his part. When we think of all the prayer opportunities that people came up, God is doing something in those moments. God's at work. When you think about those who had just come to faith, I think Alpine's awesome. We preach the gospel. When you preach the gospel, people are going to respond. And God's the one that changes hearts. God's the one that brings deliverance. And so when we think about our part, we have a lot of responsibility. But praising God for his part, him remaining faithful within all the people who came, we don't want to miss out on that. And so typically now when I shut that door and I'm the last one out, or I'm walking out to the car, depending on if I get out a little bit earlier and there's other people, I'll talk to people maybe on the way out. But I just spend time praising God. God, thank you for your work. Thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your, you know, grace and mercy that all of us need. Thank you that you are at work in this, and you care far greater about this service than any of us, Lord. And so just thank you for your part and how you remain faithful in that part. And then also, just as John said, there's a lot of follow-up. And so not only praising God, but just praying God, that these connections would happen. You know, in a sermon, hearts will move, hearts will be motivated, and they'll come up and ask for things. But to really accomplish that handoff or to really accomplish that connection, that's hard to do, especially without God. So that God would just see these things through, the connections, the notes we've made. I'm with you, John. I keep my phone on me now every Sunday, and I'll have people text me. But I also have a little note section that I can go to my phone really quick and put notes in so I don't forget. And that has been a life-changing thing for me as a pastor, because I would get home and go, who was that? What was the name of that person? And I'm very forgetful as well. So just thinking through all the connections that we're trying to accomplish out of that service, but God needs to be a part of that. God needs to remain faithful in bringing people together and allowing and seeing those things through. We need to do our part, but here's the good news. We'll know that God will do his part.
Amen. Well, hopefully, guys, this has been helpful. I think if I could boil it down, I would just say two things. Number one, be a leader of leaders. You know, bring people in who are going to help you, because this would be overwhelming if you're trying to do everything that we've talked about today on your own. And number two, checklists can be your friend. I know some guys are just averse to using a checklist, but I'm telling you, it will make your life simpler, and it'll make the life simpler of all those volunteers that you have every Sunday. So God bless you guys. We'll see you on the next training.